the Colts Coverage Podcast. I'm Joel A. Erickson. I'm joined, as always, by Nate Atkins. Nate is about to have an interlude here. He gets to do what's, I assume, is going to be a pretty fun trip. Tell him what you're doing starting Thursday.
Yeah, tomorrow morning I'm getting in the car and I'm driving out to St. Louis and I'm going to be covering Arch Madness, which is the Missouri Valley Conference tournament for basketball in St. Louis. That's where Indiana State is going to be, and they have a very fun team this year. So we'll see how far they make it in that, but pretty much a weekend of basketball. And as the way it works out, also we'll get a little bit of time to swing back into Columbia, Missouri, where both Joel and I went to school at Mizzou. First trip back to the alma mater in about 7 years, I think. So, you know, you get to combine some of these things this time of year. So it'll be a busy few days, but it should be pretty fun too.
Yeah. Getting to do stuff like this is always fun. It's fun to dip into sports that we don't cover as much, especially basketball. I think both of us are pretty big basketball fans. Yeah, it should be fun. We're here to talk about the Colts, though. We're here to talk about free agency coming up. When Nate gets back from St. Louis, you guys can. I don't know why any of these guys would be in St. Louis, but if you guys have any people Nate can pick up along the way that you want, just send it to him. He'll pop him in the car and bring him to Chris Ballard to sign him on Monday.
I don't know. Any leftover St. Louis Rams still looking together?
I know. It's not the best. It's not the best route. You might have to go out of your way a little bit. Like,
yeah, they have to. Can you? Maybe I could just keep driving down I-70 past Columbia to Kansas City. Get L'Jarius Sneed as they're working out the trade.
And there you go. There you go. That. Yeah. I mean, if you're in Columbia, it's like, why not? It's like an hour and 45 minutes. Then.
Yeah. I mean. Sneed's not going to have the money on a new contract to make it here himself, so it makes sense.
Do you have something big enough to move him? Do you have a car big enough to move him, or is he going to have to, you know, the Colts going to have to pony up for a truck?
Oh, I figured he was that type of like all ball guy that just shows up in the car and that's all he brings, like a backpack and that's about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He doesn't have earthly possessions just drag him down.
Yeah, we don't need that. We're pursuing championships here.
I mean, he's not as focused as Arch Manning. Nobody's as focused as Arch Manning.
He can't even
be digitally playing games.
I do think Arch Manning is focused. He's focused on the negotiation with EA Sports to get the big deal for next year. It's a lot of focus.
You just like that's fine. Just say that. Don't say like I'm trying to focus on football. did you see Brandon McCarthy, the former Major League Baseball pitcher, his tweet about it?
No.
He said it. I'm paraphrasing here, but it was something along the lines of people don't understand. This is why I retired. The sheer physical and mental like fatigue of being ready every time somebody flips the game on.
That is funny. That's what's funny about the whole thing. They're just like, here's $600, can we use your name? And he was like, I'm too focused on football to answer that question.
I think
his focus will change as the dollar figures change. Sometimes it's how that works.
Yeah, it's often how that works. I also have bad news for any player who does this. It's not just Arch Manning, because like when we were kids, well, maybe when I was a kid, you might have different players when you're from a little bit later. Nate's not – you're not that much younger than me, but you're younger enough that it kind of changes players. Michael Jordan was never an NBA Jam. There were significant Barry Bonds absences from certain games when I was growing up. I have bad news for Arch Manning. If he doesn't lend his name to the game, they're going to make a quarterback – named March Anning with similar qualities and ratings, and everyone is just going to change the name in their game anyway, because you can do that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe he'll come around. His family needs a lot of money these days. You struggle a lot, so you know, eventually you got to do what you got to do to feed the family.
Okay, real quick, what did you have a specific game you played a ton of like sports wise growing up?
And once I got into like high school, it was NCAA. And then once I got to college, it was very healthy on levels of that, because like we had a house of four people, so we could do like dynasties together. And it just kind of got out of control at sometimes. And that was also like at the end of NCAA. So the very final game came out, I think going into my senior year, it had Denard Robinson on the cover, NCAA 14. And I have played that until it's broken. And then I've had to go find like copies off of eBay. So for a long time, that was sort of the game for me. And then of course they stopped making it. Eventually I got bored of waiting, but I wasn't as much into, I didn't enjoy Madden as much. You'd play it sometimes. I actually didn't play Madden for a long time until, funny enough, I was actually talking to Anthony Richardson about it, because he played some kids at like the Riley's Children's Hospital and said he got destroyed. And so he decided to go home and play as himself that night. And then I told him I would go play as him too. So eventually I went out and I bought Madden. So it's the first Madden I've bought in like a long time. But then NCAA will be back, so I'll buy that.
So with NCAA, the thing is, you didn't really do this as much because the players' names were never in it. Although, like I said, we all knew who they were. But was there ever a player that you went into the game and changed their ratings to make them better?
I don't actually think I did that. I kind of like the challenge of trying to win with worse players.
Interesting.
I think I've created those guys. I just moved off them because it was too easy.
I turned Jeff Jenkins into, let's see, gotta look for a good comp here. Need a left-handed outfielder. I don't think I messed with his fielding much, which I probably didn't know as much about the fielding at the time. I would guess that if I played MLB The Show too, they probably don't. Defense doesn't matter as much as it does in actual baseball. I turned Jeff Jenkins not into like Ted Williams, but like, I mean, we're talking like a clear 320, 330 guy. Like all of his best season totals were like the floor, basically.
Oh.
You know,
you just created like Casey at the bat.
You know what I did? I turned Jeff Jenkins into 2018 and 2019 Christian Yelich. That's what he was.
Hmm.
He was almost exactly like 2018 and 2019 Christian Yelich. You have to understand, though, like at a point when Jeff Jenkins would have been on whatever game that was, I don't remember, the Brewers were garbage and had been garbage for a very, very long time. So I think most kids probably did that, but I had to do some work. Jeff Jenkins was a very good Major League Baseball player.
You made your Mike Trout.
I don't want to besmirch Jeff Jenkins at all, because I loved him, but I needed upgrades.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever actually messed with the attributes. I haven't done a lot with messing with the attributes, but I used to do that thing in NCAA where you like play the full career, and I would make myself playing at Ashland High School, which is a school in Northeast Ohio where I grew up. And they had like all the colors and stuff. And it was like, I pretty much made exactly who I was in high school as a defensive end, except I did not make me 5'9 and 170 pounds. I made me better than Nick Bosa, basically. And I rode that to like Ohio State. I just remember like my last year there, it was like, if I had a game with like fewer than three sacks, I was mad. Like that was a horrible game.
Well, there you have it. We getting you ready.
Very realistic.
Getting you guys ready for the return of games. I can no longer play. We don't have a gaming system in my house. I don't have the discipline. I have to work here, and the last thing I need is MLB The Show. That's the last thing in the world that I need. I don't need that at all. The football games too, but at least with the football games, the seasons are much, much shorter. Mm-hmm. I would play every game. I would play all of the 162.
Oh.
It would be bad. The Colts, in terms of if you're looking for a player in Madden, you want to up probably not to up the ratings that much, but if you want to up the ratings, the Colts did what they said they would do and franchise tag Michael Pittman to make sure that he will not hit the free agent market. I mean, technically he can hit the free agent market. I'll start by giving the quick rundown on non-exclusive. It's a non-exclusive franchise tag. That's the one teams use most often. It means that basically he can negotiate with other teams. If they give him an offer sheet, the Colts have a chance to match. If they do not match, that team, whoever's signing him, owes the Colts 2 first-round picks. Now, I know that for some people that brings up all sorts of possibilities, like, hey, what if this happens? It doesn't happen. Yeah. It just doesn't happen very often. And so I would say that this essentially accomplishes what they thought it was going to accomplish. You know, it's Michael Pittman Jr. is going to be a Colt in September. I would say that based on what I heard in the hours leading up to the deadline, I don't think it's going to be that hard for them to reach a long-term deal. I think they were fairly close. I don't know this from Pittman's side, but I wonder if Pittman just wanted to see if there's a few more comps to come up.
Yeah, I mean, Pittman has been, you know, that's more the side that I've gotten to look into and talk to him about a lot throughout the season. I mean, he's very aware of how this plays out at the wide receiver position these days. It's just, what was that, just on Monday, Mike Evans signed a deal. And you would think, like, coming into the offseason, you'd think, I mean, Mike Evans is a great player, but he's 4 years older than Michael Pittman, like, a 30-year-old wide receiver, what's he really going to pull in? What was a shorter deal for 2 years, but it was $26 million a year. It just added one more name to that group of guys getting more than $25 million, which keeps growing and growing. It used to be just like one or two guys, and now that's become sort of the baseline. If you were a very, you know, proven number one wide receiver who's still kind of healthy, durable in your prime, you're going to get an annual value that's in the 20s. And so, you know, the franchise tag is at 21.8. So that's sort of, you know, it's a floor to it. Pittman's been like, you know, it's kind of a fine line because I know ultimately he doesn't want to play on the franchise tag. Not that he will sit out. I just mean that it's not like he wants the long-term deal. That's the end goal, is that security and that, you know, and you can get more than 21.8 million if you play this right. But he did know that that was like, wasn't necessarily a bad thing. It was a way to sort of get a sort of really good salary. I mean, it's the best salary by far he's had yet in the NFL. But at the same time, it kind of just extends the life of the negotiations to where, you know, 2 days ago it was Mike Evans signing a deal. You know, depending on how long it goes, it could be Justin Jefferson, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Ja'Marr Chase, you know, just adding to either the ceiling of the league, because at least two of those guys are no doubt, you know, in a higher class than Pittman, but it kind of just expands the range of what wide receivers are getting these days. I think, like, whenever that Justin Jefferson contract comes down, that's going to be kind of crazy. That will probably, I would imagine, with the way the cap just increased by the most ever, I would have to think that could top Tyreek's deal of $30 million a year. And so then at some point, you know, it all plays into it where it's like, yeah, Pittman is not Justin Jefferson, but he's able to say, like, if Justin Jefferson gets 32, you know, you got to pay me more than 22 type of thing. And so, you know, so he's got time. I mean, they don't have anything that they're supposed to show up for, even voluntary, you know, for another month or so. And then in terms of actually having to be at something, you know, that is mandatory, not until, you know, late July, basically. So, I don't know. He's super confident in, like, where he stands, and he's confident in the process, and he has the right to be and the reason to be at wide receiver. And but clearly the Colts are interested in, you know, it doesn't seem like they're lowballing either. They kind of knew what the deal was going to be, what the market is. I remember asking Chris Ballard at his last presser this season about the wide receiver market. He made the analogy to, like, you can complain about gas being over $4 a gallon, but you can either drive or walk. So at this point, they clearly have told us they want to drive. They guaranteed Pittman would be here in September, and they've been negotiating. So it wasn't like just the tag to extend him for a year. Like, they want him here. And I think if they want him here, what I've understood for Pittman is, so long as they show it, you know, in the contract, he's going to want to be here too. So,
yeah,
I think he's heading in a nice direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to look at some of the guys who could get deals this offseason. Nico Collins, Brandon Ayuk, Amon-Ra St. Brown, CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson is obviously the big one you already mentioned. If all those guys sign, in addition to T. Higgins, I think the Evans deal ended up coming out to more like 2 years, 41, with a bunch of incentives tied on. But once all those guys, or if those guys sign a bunch of deals right now, like Pitt said at the end of the season, you know, he wants to see what's available for him there on the market. Well, like, the simple way to do that is to get to free agency and teams actually tell you what they want to pay you. But there's another way to do that. And one of the ways to do that is, you know, you get franchise tagged, these other people sign deals, it gives you more comps, you get a better idea of what the market is, and as those salaries rise, it's easier for you to argue your position. That's another way for you to see what the market is by seeing what other players are around. Because I've said this before, I'm going to keep banging the drumbeat. That's all NFL contracts are. It's just comps. You know, like a good example is, you know, last year at this time, we were talking about Jonathan Taylor. Why don't they give him the Nick Chubb deal? They basically gave him the Nick Chubb deal, you know, when it all came down to it, almost exactly when you factor in the rise in the salary cap. Like, that's all NFL contracts are, is comps. And by not signing an extension or agreeing to an extension before the deadline. And again, I was told they were close. And just the fact that they were the last team to do the tag tells you they were close. They waited about 2 hours longer than anybody else. I think from Pittman's side, it just makes sense to get a few more comps in there, see if the skyrocketing wide receiver market can bump you up another couple mil.
Yeah, I think like I said, he's got time on his side, and just looking out like how this plays out is that, like, if it were, I don't expect this, but if it were to play out to where he played this year on the tag and we get to next spring, you know, he still has a chance to either hit free agency or they have to pay that 20% increase on this year's tag, which would bring it to, I think, around 24 million. And then it's like, you know, then so it's going to work out fine for him either way. I mean, ultimately, though, he wants the security. You don't want to kind of just forever be looking out for, you know, like every year be a contract year. He just had his best season. He had a season where a lot of things came together for him in terms of, just kind of fitting in, you know, handling the ups and downs better, playing 16 games, you know, making some, you know, and not that he became a downfield guy exactly because they lost their quarterback, but he became more than just a guy who gets catches, you know, in low efficiency, and made some game-winning plays too, or should have had two game-winning touchdowns, but they didn't end up winning the Browns game, but. You know, so like he's in a spot to sign that kind of deal. He just, you know, like anybody else. Like the main thing with Pittman that I've always said is, like, he wants to see what's out there because it's fun to be wanted. Like, it's fun to, at that position that, you know, people, if he were to be a free agent, teams would just line up, they'd make their offers, he'd get to, you know, go to dinner and talk about, you know, whose quarterback is going to be, who the offense coordinator is going to be, where he might live. Like, Pittman. He just likes that kind of, I guess, attention, but also, just the opportunity, like the way that that bidding would play up his situation. So he's just playing the cards that he has, the cards that, frankly, he's earned by playing four seasons where three straight years he's led the team in receiving and played with seven different starting quarterbacks. Like, it's been a kind of crazy weird time the past few years here, and this is his chance to say, you know what, like, I survived last season, even though we lost the quarterback, even though, you know, he got split in half basically in the middle of a game and couldn't move his arm for the next week, bounced back from that, came back, you know, he put his best season out there. So why not see kind of how far you can take that. But, you know, he's the fact that they were negotiating yesterday also shows you, like, they're not just close on, like, the side of the Colts are willing to pay up. But clearly Pittman is interested in a long-term deal, too, to take it to the level that they went to. So that's always been my vibe out of him, is he just was ready for them to, you know, really identify him as a foundational, we want this guy to come here and set our foundation for us, the way they did DeForest Buckner and Quentin Nelson. And it sounds like they're getting close to identifying him that the same way.
Yeah, it's also just, it's fun to get paid. And you don't know how many chances you're going to get at it. And people, I think this is a good thing to talk about real quick. In this free agency discussion is, like, for whatever reason, people are still mostly against players getting paid and they don't really care what happens with their team's money. That's fine. You know, I can see why people, necessarily, you know, you're cheering for your team. You want the best for your team. I get that. I think it's important to remember that, especially in football where the contracts are not guaranteed and you don't get all the money, there's a very obvious reason to try to get as much as you can regardless of situation, and it's that you don't know when you're going to have another chance at it. You don't know if you're going to have a chance at a third contract. You don't know that you're going to have a chance if you don't know that things aren't going to go well. And, like, if you're looking for an obvious example, Shaquille Leonard. It just happened. You know, he was an All-Pro 3 years in a row. This is a guy who's, you know, considered one of the better linebackers in football. He looked really good. Like, everything looked like it was headed for longevity, and he's gone from the Colts now because of an injury. They have to. I think you have to try to maximize it. I guess you don't have to. You could make a different decision if you wanted to. But most players understand that from a money-making standpoint, you have to maximize it when you get a chance at this second contract, because there's no way to know that it's going to keep going that way. Outside of maybe, like, if you're a elite quarterback, that's maybe the only way you could feel like, well, even if I get hurt, I'll be fine. I think everybody else kind of knows you've got to get the money when you can, because there's just no way to know that it's going to be there down the road.
Yeah, and another example kind of in that Shaq way, in a different way, is Marlon Mack. You know, he never got that money because of a horrific injury right as he was kind of building up, getting ready to be a free agent, and never got any money at all. And we brought that example up a lot with Jonathan Taylor when that was kind of a whole conversation about that. As a lot of fans were like, why not just play out, you know, your final contract year? Why is this such a big deal? That's why it's a big deal. And, you know, Pittman it's a different situation when you're wide receivers. He didn't have to necessarily take it to that level when he had a year left on the contract. And in fact, he didn't want to. He was the one who told them, I don't want to negotiate till after the year, because he was ready to have his career season or his career best season and would love to get to a competitive market at his position. But it's still the same concept ultimately, which is you've got to get that security in there. And that is one thing the franchise tag does, is it's not long-term security, but it is guaranteeing him $22 million basically for this season. That is a step in this process. And I mean, I get it why, like, yeah, I mean, a fan of a team should want their team to get great deals on every single player and every single player to sign, you know, just take less money to keep more players around and do it because you want to win and you love being here. And that's, like, it's great in theory. It's just not how I think anybody would actually operate in those shoes. Really, the only players that you see who should most of the time, the only players you see actually leaving money, intentionally leaving money on the table that they know they could get elsewhere, are guys who've made a lot of money already, like, or are going to. Mostly it's like this idea that, like the idea of, like, ring chasing, sign a hometown discount just to sort of build. That only really happens with guys who've made a lot of money in their career, kind of like late last run guys. You almost never see anybody who's like Pittman's age decide, like, I'm just going to sign way low because I just want to be on a loaded roster and win a ring. Like, you can win a ring when you're 32, but you've got to get that security first. Because like you said, it's no guarantee that it's ever going to be there. It's just always kind of funny to me with fans. Like, again, I get it. I get the energy that's behind that, but it's just always funny to me, the ones that will, they love to point out like who's overpaid on a team, but I never hear them point out who's underpaid. You know, a lot of talk about Shaquille Leonard's contract. No one ever wants to bring up Zaire Franklin's contract, and how we should maybe adjust that, because he's, you know, not getting paid what he's producing on the field. So I don't know. It's just always kind of it's just the different perspectives you're in. And we're some of the people that are just frankly between all of that. I mean, kind of, I mean, I will say like, I like players getting paid. I'm not going to hide that back, because I think that I see so much money out there. We see what they go through. You get to know these guys, and like, ultimately to me, they're the ones laying their bodies and brains on the line. So in a general way, I want players to get paid, but I like to apply that across the board. I think all players who perform and deliver should get paid, because that kind of rewards the people who are, you know, giving people like you and me jobs.
I just think it's unreasonable to expect the players to do something that the team would not do. The team's not going to keep them around and pay them for past performance if they're not performing in the future. And so a player shouldn't look at it as, oh, I owe it to this team or whatever. The team doesn't care about the team that doesn't feel like they owe it to them for the most part in the way they're going to make their decisions. So like you're not operating in a situation where you're taking from somebody who's giving you a ton. Like it's all predicated on how you play, and the team's not going to do anything extra for you. So you might as well go for your contract.
Yeah. I mean, perfect example of that is like when you talk about honoring a contract, I mean, you know, it may not feel great when like Jonathan Taylor doesn't want to play on his last deal, wants a new deal. There'll be other players who, if you have the leverage, I mean, we've been seeing that a lot here. You know, Kenny Moore tried it a little bit. It doesn't ever go well with fans about like when they don't want to just play out the deal that they signed. That happens with teams all the time. Like the Colts didn't let Shaquille Leonard finish his contract. Now he has a lot of guarantees in it, or had a lot of money left to come. But like there was still more money on that contract. They could
in the NFL they build the outs into the deal.
Yeah,
like it's in there. You can look and see when the team's going, hey, we're gonna punt out of this if we need to, and like, you know, to the point that some people would say to that is just, well, obviously they agreed to that contract. That's fine, but that doesn't mean that the player should then just bend over backwards when they actually have a chance to cash it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just understanding the power dynamics too of like players don't have a lot of, you know, they don't have a lot of leverage. So when they get the leverage, like it's not just about them either. A lot of them, like Jonathan Taylor fighting for the contract he got, that helps other players. Like it's why we talk about these contracts being comps. If like Amon-Ra St. Brown, Justin Jefferson, and Ja'Marr Chase all came out and said, you know what, we just love where we're playing, we'd like to sign for $5 million a year, that would not help the other wide receivers in the market. What'll help them is if they go for as much money as they can get, and this money, as the cap rises, keeps going back to the players. It's why they have a union. They try to fight together as much as they can, but you know, it's very different than baseball and basketball. You know, players have way more leverage with this stuff, and they have guaranteed contracts too. And I think that's probably the biggest difference, is that you can't, I don't think it's reasonable to expect the player to just stick to your contract, like this is the one sport where the contracts are not guaranteed. And so on the players end, they shouldn't be guaranteed if they don't have to be either. It's just kind of a two-way street.
Moving on to what could be, you know, big. The Colts have an enormous amount of cap space. I'm looking up what SpotRack has it at right now. It should be more than that, I guess, after the tag.
Yeah.
$53 million is what SpotRack has it as for top 51. $53 million.
Okay.
That's after,
so
And that's after they've tagged Michael Pittman Jr. If he does sign a long-term extension, his cap figure can very much come down. Very, very obviously, because you can put signing bonus in and move some of that money around if you want to. $53 million is a lot of money. They can do a lot. They can do plenty with that. I think, you know, Tyler Dragon from our network, from USA Today Network, reported that the Colts are interested in L'Jarius Sneed. I think everyone is interested in L'Jarius Sneed. Is that fair?
Yeah. If you're watching the playoffs at all, you should be.
I've been a big L'Jarius Sneed fan for a while. Unlike some of the other free agents that we're going to end up having to talk about this with defensive backs soon. Like, both you and I watch a lot of football, but we also watch a lot of football with who's in prime time because we're covering games. And so some guys we're not going to know as much about. I mean, I've liked L'Jarius Sneed for a while because the Chiefs are always on. That would be the kind of deal that, like, everyone says Chris Ballard doesn't make, and for the most part he does not make very often. But that would be the kind of deal that you make with a quarterback on a rookie deal. It'd be very similar to the Buckner deal, actually. Yeah. Be very similar to the Buckner deal. Now, the draft pick compensation and what they want for L'Jarius Sneed, if there really are seven teams involved, that I don't know. I you know what I mean? Like, if you're gonna trade for him and sign him to a $20 million deal, like, I know people are throwing around like lower than first round. Like, for a really good corner, shouldn't you be willing to give a first round pick?
Yeah, Mark. It's giving up a first round pick and the $20 million, and then it's more about opportunity cost. Is that I think he's worth that. You're just, if you become infatuated with the pass catchers in this year's draft, like, that's,
well, I think that I would be maybe unwilling to give up. I think I maybe be unwilling to give up the 15th pick in this draft, mainly not because corner is not important. Corner is extraordinarily important, but because corner is a very volatile position in terms of year over year long term performance. I just think that the Chiefs can ask that if they want.
And if I think if it becomes a very hot bidding market, that's where it would take Chris Ballard to do something he hasn't done. I wasn't here when the DeForest Buckner trade went down. That did cost a first round pick, so obviously he paid up, fell in love with it, made him a foundational type of player when they kind of needed some on defense. But I kind of remember that coming out of nowhere, at least the time when they decided to trade him.
It absolutely, just to back you up, since I was here, there were no rumors. There was nothing. There was nothing even around DeForest Buckner. Like, going into that opening of the league year, like, there wasn't a single whisper. It was just the league year opens, the Colts are trading for DeForest Buckner. Holy crap, where did that come from? And it turned out that they'd had the deal in place for like a month.
Yeah, that's kind of how I'd understood it, but that makes sense. So, like, you think about it in that way, so that's two teams bidding with each other, and it came to an agreement of what this is worth to both sides, and they pay, and it's a high price. If they could do that for L'Jarius Sneed, I could see that where that would work out for the Colts, where maybe they part with a day two pick, maybe a day two picks. But yeah, it's when that gets to, like, if it's seven teams bidding on him, I don't know, that's where it gets a little bit rich, because I still, the reason I'm coming more and more around to, like, them drafting a pass catcher really early is that you think about what ultimately matters more than anything else right now is Anthony Richardson, getting him going, getting him settled, getting this whole thing cooking with Shane and Anthony. And so corner's incredibly important, and we've done so much podcasting on here about how they didn't do enough there and how they should do more. But, like, I still think there are ways to address that, keep it from being a weakness that we'll talk about in this podcast through free agency. But to actually get that kind of, like, you know, high upside, high value type player at pass catcher, I think that's where the number 15 pick is so valuable this year.
either way, you know, you've kind of been saying all along, you think that the best way to address the secondary is to add experience. And so I think that if you're looking at the obvious spots to add with some of that $53 million, it's the secondary. And the other piece of this is, let's start with corner. We'll start with corner. But the other piece of this is, both at corner and safety, the additions are contingent also on the Colts making decisions and or re-signing guys that were already on their roster last year. So starting with corner, if you re-sign Kenny Moore, I think you still need a guy. A L'Jarius Sneed type is exactly the kind of player that we've talked about, like would take that group to the next level. And that might be harder to find on the open cornerback market. But if you don't re-sign Kenny Moore, you got to be active in one way or the other. You got to be really active. You got to be going after something.
Yeah, the way I think about this is they need – so understanding that Kenny Moore and Julian Blackman are currently free agents along with all the guys that we're going to talk about on the outside, I think you need two sizable veteran signings at least. So it could be bring back Julian and Kenny. I still think you need a veteran outside player, but at least that's two of them. I don't see how they can get by with just like one big signing and just use the draft for everything else, because that's ultimately the spot they were in last year in terms of guys being young or new at positions. I mean, Kenny Moore is the only established player at the position he was at. Julian Blackman is learning a new position, and it worked great. So it can work out sometimes, but their bets didn't work out great at free safety and in a lot of spots at outside corner. So it's like about the reason I think they should go the veteran route is like there's sometimes where you just have to know what you're getting. And sometimes that's worth the overpay. Like we go back in time, like left tackle should have been that position for probably two different years in there. Or yeah, you have to pay a lot. Yeah, it may not, you know, was Charles Leno a superstar? Maybe not. Dwayne Brown, like, does he have a lot left? But, like, you know they're not going to come in here and flop. And the alternatives that they went with flopped. So, like, some positions you just cannot whiff at. And I fear that, like, there's still a risk that you whiff if you use the 15th pick because corner's volatile. And rookies are, you know, even really talented rookies can come in. But if you want to go where this team wants to go, into the playoffs, win a division title eventually – you're going to be in a matchup where, like, your outside corner has to go up against Stephon Diggs or Ja'Marr Chase. And I just don't think it makes – you don't want that to be, like, the first time that guy's ever played a playoff game is all of a sudden having that matchup. And so that's where, like, outside corner to me is the spot. Like, if I had to pick one where I'm like, they need a veteran here, it's that spot. I'd say even probably – I don't know, maybe even more than strong safety or – nickel corner. I think you need one veteran safety too between the two spots. So to me, like those bare minimum two, you know, established veterans, one needs to be, I think one should be an outside corner and one should be a safety. And then you could get to three if you sign Kenny Moore back. But I think like their issues last year, primarily in secondary, were some of it was injuries and players who weren't that great, but a lot of it was youth and players in new positions. And the draft doesn't solve all of that to me.
Yeah. The only problem, and I know you have a guy you like here. I'm setting you up to kind of come back at me on it. I don't love the free agent cornerbacks. I like L'Jarius Sneed a lot more.
Yeah.
I think
he agrees with you.
Then I like any of the outside cornerbacks that are available in free agency, especially if we're talking about paying these guys like $14, $15 million. I don't know what they're going to get. I just know that that's kind of where cornerbacks have gone in the past, even in depressed markets. Or I shouldn't say depressed markets, even in markets with little top-tier talent at the position. I don't love the corner position. Like if you're looking for stars in the cornerback position, like you know, is there a 1 year deal available for somebody the way, you know, or a 1 or 2 year deal the way there was something for Gilmore? Gilmore's a free agent. I just because of the way that ended, I don't know if you could see that coming back. Although, I mean, they know he can play in the system. I don't love the corners. Now you have one you like. I'll let you go with him now. But yeah, I don't love what I see at the corner position, even with some of the releases that just happened. Like Tre'Davious White's a big name. He just got released by the Bills. We're taping this on Wednesday. He got released by the Bills today. He's also played like 10 games in the last 2 years combined. So, yeah, it's a position that, frankly, people just don't like to let get to the open market, which is why, you know, kind of what we were saying earlier about L'Jarius Sneed and his and the demand for him. That's why that might be a bidding war.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you're a team that wants to go out there now and add a guy you know is a star cornerback, L'Jarius Sneed might be the only route because we don't know what the rookies are going to be. There's not – occasionally there's those guys at the very top of the draft, you know, Derek Stingley, Denzel Ward type, if you have a top three pick. There's not one this year, and nor do the Colts have that pick. If there was. So, like, yeah, that's the route is to trade for L'Jarius Sneed. If you want a guy to come in and be, like, the anchor of your back end, no doubt, huge asset who can make tons of huge plays in the postseason, that's the route. That's why it's so expensive. Mostly I agree with you. I mean, most of these corners are getting released because they are not trending up. They are trending down, or they're getting pretty old. Like, Stephon Gilmore, you know, was an awesome player here 2 years ago. From what I saw, he's still very good with Cowboys. He has kind of defied a lot of the rules about age, but he's 33 and a half. I mean, at some point, that is an unforgiving position. We saw when it goes, it goes. Remember the end of Darrelle Revis' time. So that was a little tough. But, yeah, there's one guy that I do think that, like, if you want to plug a hole and get, like, a legit, not superstar, but a very good starting outside corner in his – still kind of in his prime. It's Kendall Fuller from the Commanders. Kendall Fuller used to be on the Chiefs. I've always kind of been familiar and interested with the Fuller family. I covered Kyle Fuller when he's on the Bears. They all kind of play the same sort of very cerebral, physical type of style. Press man that fits kind of how they play here. He can produce on the ball. Not a huge pick guy, but he's made plays. He's had a season with 2 defensive scores in it. He's had a season with 5 picks in it. But mostly he's like, we talk about what they didn't have last year on the outside, which is durability and reliability. That's what I think he brings. He's only missed 3 games in the past 3 seasons. He's 29, so maybe not have forever in his prime, but he is, you know, he's 2 years, I think, younger than Gilmore was when they signed him. And yeah, he's a reliable player in coverage. He's played enough in this league with 93 starts, a lot of matchups against good players, knows a lot of the players you go up against. Just kind of know what you're getting here. And so, like, the way I look at free agency is it's not like a trade, like the trade route with L'Jarius Sneed or when teams have done it for, you know, wide receivers, Trent Williams, DeForest Buckner, that is a way to pay a lot to lift a star player off another team, but very rarely do you find your stars in free agency. I think that's what the draft is for. Free agency to me is where you sometimes just bite the bullet to say, this is a really important position to us and we can't have it be bad this year. And I think corners where they're at, the Colts, if they want to be a real team next season, they have to figure something out on the outside corner. So to me, like Kendall Fuller, his market value on SpotTrack is they have him signing a deal for 4 years and $54 million. So it's a lot. I mean, that's the kind of thing. The market's not good at that position, so you probably have to pay even more for the one guy that he's the one guy I see as like I think he's a very good player that's not on the decline, and you got to pay over for that sometimes. I understand that would be a bit rich, but like I wouldn't be opposed if you told me they took one real aggressive swing at an outside free agent this year and it's an outside corner that they feel great about. I don't know. I could get on board with that.
I think my concern is just his age. Like, how many years are you giving him?
Yeah.
A lot of tread on the tires. You know, He's going into his ninth season. I think he's what, 30, 31?
29.
I don't want to give him 4 years. I mean, that four-year deal would really be a two with an out, I'm assuming. Right. I don't know.
One of those, like, the cap just went up $30 million. I don't know how much more it's going to go up. It's one of those deals where, like, the moment it's signed, it would be like, really? You paid that? But, like, in 2 years, you have either the option to get out of it, or I think maybe the cap has risen enough to where it's kind of normal. I mean, it's going to be – free agency is overpaying for the most part. At least on, like, guys who are solutions are going to be overpays. You know, one guy that I always bring up and think about is Christian Kirk. The time that deal got shredded, and I'm not saying it's a good deal, but that was a spot where the Jaguars said, like, we got Trevor Lawrence coming off a bad year. He cannot have another bad year. We have to find him a go-to receiver. And they paid like crazy. And then Christian Kirk was a go-to receiver for them. And it's really the best guy that that Trevor Lawrence has to play with. So once in a while, I think you got to rip the Band-Aid off. And I don't know. I just think, like, my fear with the Colts right now is that in a year from now, we could have the same discussion of, like, hey, really talented team. Shane Steichen did some great stuff. Offense has some good playmakers, but they can't cover anyone on the outside. And I don't think they should repeat that mistake.
I don't either. I think I might have just talked myself into just trading for Legarius Sneed.
Are you giving up the 15th?
Kendall Fuller is also, I think part of it is also with me, like, there's been a little bit of variance in his play. He's been better. And like, I know with the Chiefs, they kind of were like, at the end of his time with the Chiefs, he was kind of a disappointment there. I don't know. Tre'Davious White, I want to bring up Tre'Davious White just because I know, like, it's such a huge name that people are going to be thinking about him. Like, obviously, Gilmore was coming off of an injury when they got him, but I think there's a big difference. It was one injury, essentially, with Gilmore. Tre'Davious White, I just looked it up. It is 10 games in the last 2 years. It's 21 in the last three. And so that injury situation is getting more towards like the lines of like a Jason Verrett, where if you're going to take him, it's going to be on a 1 year prove it deal and probably not that much of a 1 year prove it deal. The availability issues there are huge. Let's move to the safety position.
Well, I will say real quick on Legarius Sneed, I think the other thing that has people very attracted to him that makes him different than these free agents is he could play inside and outside. And like those guys don't grow on trees who can do it at like a high level. And that mattered a lot in that Super Bowl when he was tailing on Brandon Ayuk. That mattered a lot in a lot of those matchups is that you can't, if you're going to invest in that kind of player, you want like that guy, like teams can't avoid that guy. That's kind of the idea with DeForest Buckner is like, you have to double team him. He's right in your face. With Legarius Sneed, like you can't travel. You can't bump a guy inside just to avoid him. And so that, you know, it's hard to find those guys. Like that's why any of these guys at premium positions that offer something that's very valuable, they're going to cost a ton.
I am 1,000% on board with the one of the reasons I like the idea of Cooper DeJean from Iowa in the draft. If that's a possibility, if that ends up being a possibility, is just like they have gone several years now without like a very obvious backup for Kenny Moore, and I think part of that is just the difficulty of having two slots. There's not really that many slots. It feels like every team kind of has one. But if you have an outside guy who can also move inside and move into Kenny's role where you play outside in base and then inside in, the nickel, you know, the other 75% of the time when that's going on, that interests me. So that does help Kendall Fuller's case in terms of just the versatility in the secondary of having someone as a replacement for Moore if he gets hurt. I was just looking real quick before we move on to the safety market where I think we're going to end. I think the whole idea of a war daddy edge rusher is something that the more I think about it, something that I think that you'd love to have going forward, even if it means you move on from other players. I was just looking at the free agents. I don't know if there's one there.
No. Not in terms of what we're thinking about, which is like, can you win with speed off the edge? Like, that's not how Leonard Williams plays.
Well, right now. Danielle Hunter at 29, but he's 29, has some injury history. Danielle Hunter, I think, is the big one, but
He's not listed on Spotrac.
I know he's on NFL.com that they just had coming up. Or the one that they put up yesterday. Now I'm worried that I'm missing something. No, he's.
Yeah, I don't know why he's not showing up on.
He's there. Danielle Hunter is a really good player. If Danielle Hunter is available and you can get him and you feel good about what he's going to be as he gets into his 30s, that's a war daddy edge rusher.
I'll just be surprised if they take a swing at the edge spot here or the draft, just because I think in their minds they've got, you know, a big year coming up for both Samson Ebukam and Kwity Paye. You've got Dio, who can play some on the outside, even though I think he's better rushing on the inside. I don't think they want to – since I guess, I just don't think they want to cover up the investments they've made already. I mean, I agree with you. I think that they need a little more. I think they need a dude on the edge, and they've given enough time to the guys here who can do some good things as – run stoppers, and they can kind of play well as a group. But as far as that guy who's going to win against max protection on 3rd and 6, you know, sometimes you got to pay up for that. But I have a feeling that what's more likely to happen is they give a trial run to these guys to see if Samson and Kwity and Dio can take one more step. And if they can't, the next year you could have a conversation on any one of those three about moving on. And maybe that's the time to take that swing.
Also, I know some Colts fans, I don't think anybody else is here, but I'm just going to throw them out there just in case anyone didn't watch the playoffs. I don't want Chase Young.
I agree.
If they sign him, that's going to look real bad, but I watch too many playoff games.
Yeah. Yep.
Just go watch the Packers game and see how many times Green Bay blocked him with a 180-pound wide receiver successfully.
It's tough. There's a guy here like Carl Lawson. Last time he was a free agent, I loved that guy. But then he immediately got hurt with the Jets. And so that's like what a lot of these guys are like. We just listed a corner. They at some point they were really good, but the injuries start adding up. And that's when you start to wonder, like, do we pay a lot of money to a guy, you know, getting into his late 20s who has an injury history, or do we go to the draft for, you know, kind of fresh blood? And so that's why, yeah, it's in general, that's why the draft to me is the place to get like your premium talent.
Let's move to the position where there is lots of talent and at all ages, safety. Julian Blackman is up. You could certainly bring him back. They really like the way he played last year. He does not have any injury concerns moving forward, according to Chris Ballard. Chris Ballard said that there was nothing long-term with that shoulder, which I think at the – I think there was some suggestion that if they had made the playoffs, maybe he could – well, no, they put him on injured reserve. He wouldn't have been to the AFC Championship game. So it was somewhat serious, but not serious enough to matter for this season. You have to fill, I think, that strong safety spot one way or the other. I think that you normally want to re-sign your own. Chris Ballard has said that, you know, the number one goal for them is always to re-sign their own. I think if you wanted to, if the Colts wanted to, or felt like Blackman's injury history made them concerned going forward, I do think that there are strong safeties on the market who are good, very good players. and young players you can work with. You know, McKinney from the Giants. I don't really know a ton about Cameron Curl. I just have not watched a lot of Commanders games recently. If you have, you have a leg up on basically everyone in this who watches the NFL. I don't think anyone's watching a ton of Commanders games recently. There's players at the strong safety position. If you decided, you know, we feel like Julian Blackmon is hurt too much. We don't know what to do there, or we don't feel like we feel like we want to maybe get, you know, another veteran player there who's also more durable. There are players available. You might have to pay for some of them, but there's players on the market, and then there's players at free safety. And I haven't looked while we've been talking. Well, I've looked a little bit while we've been talking, but more players in this position keep getting moved like every minute. Jordan Poyer is suddenly out there. Quandre Diggs at free safety. I don't think Jamal Adams. You don't think Jamal Adams, right?
No.
Very specific blitzing role you need to put him in.
Yeah, just injuries have added up on him, and that's another one of those types. But yeah, it is an issue. This is the position that for the it has a lot of options that are better than what we just talked about at edge and cornerback. Like guys that sometimes you're like, I'm a little surprised this guy is available. Like Xavier McKinney seemed like a foundational type of player. I don't know if he just got kind of caught between they're having a scheme change in New York after Wink Martindale. They also are in a bit of cap trouble there because they paid Daniel Jones a bazillion dollars to now be their backup quarterback, I think. So sometimes things happen like that where a guy gets away and it's not really like a reflection of him. And I think that's happening at some of these safety spots. Like the Jaguars spent way too much money on defense for many years. And you know, they ended up cutting like Rayshon Jenkins, who I can't tell you that I'm super familiar with exactly how he's played, but he hasn't missed it. He's played every game the past 2 years. He's turning 30 this year, but like it isn't like injuries have brought him down. And that's a guy that has played for Ron Miles and Gus Bradley with the Chargers. So that one's interesting. There's a lot of guys that are interesting that I need to look a little bit more into why they got released, why they maybe took a step back. Quandre Diggs is one of those where on some levels it's incredibly intriguing because he's a three-time Pro Bowler who came right from Seattle, which is obviously where Gus Bradley's system is from, who has a lot of the traits. I covered Quandre when he came into the league with the Lions back when he was a nickel corner, then they moved him to strong safety, and then eventually in Seattle he became a free safety. But he is that vocal, durable player, just about as extreme as you could get on both of those levels. He hasn't missed a game in like 3 years. But, you know, I know he didn't have his best year last year at all. He's interesting because I've seen him have a bad year in Detroit and bounce right back. So, you know, it's – yeah, there's options here. And, I mean, they the strong safety element, like that is the interesting thing, is I think you could – absolutely say they can upgrade the free safety spot. A lot of their problems last year, kind of youth communication consistency, that's where a veteran can kind of solve that. But they also have, like you said, an opening at strong safety. And I, for a while, have been thinking just, I think they should just bring Julian Blackmon back because it worked well and the system's the same. But when there's so many safeties like this, you do have the options of looking around and maybe getting an upgrade. And that's an interesting idea I hadn't thought enough about, just because it feels like there's like two safeties getting released every couple hours right now. So it's going to be a bloated market. They'll have a lot of options and got to think they'll sign at least one veteran. I mean, if they don't, as of right now, the only safeties they have are Ronnie Thomas and Nick Cross, basically. So like they obviously need to sign a starter in there, and you could argue maybe two. It's interesting.
Yeah, safety is a position. I can't remember if we've said this already in this pod or not, but like this is a position. The secondary in general is a spot where this is a team that brought back Gus Bradley essentially because Chris Ballard said I didn't give him enough in the secondary to be consistent back there. Like you've got to find a way to fix that. You can't just bring him back and run back with what you have and just be fine. I just don't think that that's fair to Bradley. It's not fair to your team. It's not fair to the players you're putting out there. Like they were bad enough. And Ballard said at the combine that he didn't think it was a sieve back there. Like Ballard said, like however you want to describe it, DeForest Buckner said point blank, there were some calls that Bradley didn't feel like he could make because they weren't, you know, solid in the back end. That you got to fix that. That's got to be fixed.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And then
whatever combination of players you need to sign to do that or draft or whatever, you've got to do that. You just have to. This is a team that struggled in the secondary against a string of bad quarterbacks. Next year's schedule has really good quarterbacks on it.
I mean, it's a secondary that got pretty shredded the last time we watched them against the Texans. And C.J. Stroud's really impressive, but he's a rookie, and the Texans were down to like one wide receiver in that game. Nico Collins had the stat line of like three guys, though, because that's the state that their secondary was in. And I don't know. I mean, yeah, you would like to think that Jalen Jones, Juju Brents, Roddy Thomas, Nick Cross, give them an extra year. Like they're going to be better than they were last year. But players don't always take that jump the way you want to. And obviously this team has been burned by assuming that they will at times when they have not. So, yeah, I mean, that's the argument too, that maybe it's not as – maybe you have to do more than just bring back Kenny Moore and Julian Blackman, because then it's the same group. They're a little more experienced and you hope a little healthier. But – maybe that's not enough either.
The quarterbacks on the schedule, the schedule piece of this to me is such a big part of it too. It's just an enormous part of it. You know, they played so many backup quarterbacks last year, and they're just not going to get those guys again. I mean, maybe if everyone gets hurt again, but just to run back for everybody who hasn't looked at the 2024 schedule recently, C.J. Stroud twice, Trevor Lawrence twice, Josh Allen, Tua Tagovailoa and Tyreek Hill and everybody they have, Jared Goff and the Lions offense, which returns almost essentially intact, right down to the offensive coordinator, Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers is coming off an Achilles tear. He might not be that good, but shoot. If you give him last year's Colts secondary, I'm sure he could do something with it. Jordan Love, like that's a gauntlet of guys that they're going to play. It's going to be a much, much more difficult season for the passing defense than it was this season. They have to get better there.
And let me just name some of the quarterbacks they faced. Let's go from week 7 on. P.J. Walker, Derek Carr, Bryce Young, Mac Jones, Baker Mayfield, Will Levis, Jake Browning, Mitchell Trubisky, Taylor Heineke, Aiden O'Connell, and then C.J. Stroud. So it is night and day different. And it was bad last year. It'd be one thing if they were, like, really good and we're like, hey, they should not overrate it. They were not good last year. So it's not going to – it's like, yes, those guys will get a little bit better with age, but they need to get, like, so much better to go from that schedule to what they're about to face. And the other thing, too, is you may not have as good of a pass rush next year. This was the best pass rush they've had in Indianapolis since they've gotten here. And they got a lot of good health out of these players too, relative like Dio Odengbo and you know, Tyquan Lewis got over their injury issues. Quiddy Pay worked through it for the most part. Like you get a couple injuries on the edge and then you have that secondary, like it may undo everything that they're building on offense. And that's what they can't do again. As you don't know exactly how it's going to go, but it can't be like, you can't roll back the same group with an immensely harder schedule and then get at the end of the year and say, hey, Gus still didn't have the guys that he needs. In an offseason when you have $50 million to spend, like there's not a reason to not go and get some of what you need.
The Dolphins and the Bills against last year's secondary is making me shiver. Don't like it.
I mean, even C.J. Stroud, if he had two more receivers.
Don't like it.
Yeah, that's
Jordan. Jordan, Jordan Love, the way the Packers played at the back half of the season, just like downfield throws every other snap. Don't like it.
I mean, it'd be pretty much what Matthew Stafford and Puka Nacua did to this team over and over and over again.
Don't love it. Don't love it. Anyway, so I think what we – I think as we wrap this podcast up, I think what we decided was sign two safeties and trade for L'Jarius Sneed. Is that what we decided?
Yep.
Wait. I have one possibility to throw out there. Ready? What if Brian Burns is available in a trade? Does Brian Burns interest you?
He certainly interests me. I've always loved Brian Burns' game. That takes me back to it. I wrote so many pieces demanding the Lions draft him at the time, and they took TJ Hawkinson. So I would just be right back in that wheelhouse because I just think he has a great all-around game, great array of moves. Like, he is your top-flight pass rusher that you can line up, max protect, and he's going to beat it in a way these guys can't. I don't think the Colts would consider that, though. Again, based on what they have and like and their edge guys and the cost that it's going to take. But, yeah, I'd be open to that.
I was going to say, we both like Brian Burns. I was like, I'm just going to throw something out there that Nate can't – that Nate's going to be like, oh, I'm so tempted. Yeah, he also might cost a little more because he's an edge, but –
Yeah,
that's the kind of edge that we're talking about here, like the difference maker who goes above where they were last year.
Oh yeah, it's amazing we have not discussed a single position on offense.
Offense, like they're in a position where like they could players.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's just funny to consider where we've come in a year and a half, where like the offense was like, how do we fix all this? To where we are now.
Yeah. And also, I think I just saw Matt Miller. I'm just throwing out one draft analyst. Don't get mad over the draft analyst. But he just said he had 15 receivers with a grade in the first two rounds. There's depth at the receiver position. There's good top line talent. There's good depth. There's anything you could want in a draft from the receiver position. Plus, now that they franchise tag Michael Pittman, you're not in a position where you desperately need a starter at any spot. You know, like, would you like to have a number two wide receiver who's so good that Josh Downs becomes your, you know, clear number three option? Would you like to have Brock Bowers? I mean, both of us would, but you don't necessarily have to have it to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, as of right now, Pittman under contract, they've got three big-time free agents in-house, and they're all on defense, which is also their worst unit last year. And just obviously the lift that bringing the quarterback back is going to create. It's like, if you think about like what is the biggest positional need on offense, I would say it's tight end, but that's mostly still like, I just don't know what to make of Jelani Woods at this point. It isn't the same as like, it's not like there's nothing there. And also, the tight end is just kind of a weird position. Like, that's not like a – I don't know if there's a free agent tight end to even go after now that Dalton Schultz is staying in Houston. It's like a weird – it's almost like it's weird that that's the position that I would need, because outside of that position, I don't think there's like when I did my list of free agents they should look at, they're very, like, depth-based ideas. Guys like Tyrod Taylor and Gus Edwards and Josh Reynolds. I mean – like, to me, that's what that first-round pick is about, is go get that playmaker, that super talented pass catcher that keeps coming in the league these year after year, and this year's wide receiver class is just bonkers. So, to me, that's kind of why I keep talking up spending on defense, because if you spend that first-round pick on a pass catcher, I don't know what else you really have to get on offense.
To your point about the tight end position, now that Dalton Schultz has re-signed, NFL Network yesterday put up their 101 top free agents and then broke them down by position. The tight end spot has two. Just two guys.
Who are they?
Hunter Henry at age 29. Meh. And Noah Fant.
Okay.
Fantastic. Just perfect reactions from Nate. Perfect reactions from Nate.
Well, and it's like, look at the draft class after Brock Bowers. Yeah, that's why I ultimately think Brock Bowers will go ahead of 15. It's just like, there's no other way to get a really good tight end this year. If that's what you feel like you want, it's Brock Bowers or bust. And so that makes it very hard to plan if you're tight end's the thing we need. And that's why I don't know. Colts have been a little hard to read on that just because of there's stuff we don't know all about, health and where they're at with their, they have new training staff to kind of work through some of what Jelani Woods went through. And we love Jelani Woods as a prospect. And I know the front office does. I know Chris Potter keeps bringing up the coaching staff doesn't know anything about him because they haven't used him yet. So it's a weird position to think through. And that's why if Brock Bowers is available to them in the draft, it just makes too much sense because even if Jelani Woods comes back and is a really good player, then you have two of them. And that's great. It's more yak. It's more guys for Shane to scheme open on screens and RPO plays. But if the answer is not Brock Bowers, nothing else at tight end, that's my reaction. Okay. Do you add this guy in the third round? You signed Noah Fant, whatever.
So now you're adding to our plan. This is very, very Madden-y. Madden-y the game, I mean. Not maddening, Madden-y. This is very probably not going to happen. But now to our thing, we've added get LeJarius Sneed, but not for the 15th pick.
Yep.
Because you're going to draft Brock Bowers with the 15th pick. Sign two safeties, and whatever else happens, happens. Is that the theme of this pod?
Yeah. And Kendall Fuller, too. We're just going to empty the clip. If it doesn't work, we'll turn the game off. in Madden when you do the franchise mode, you're not thinking 2 or 3 years out. You're just I'm trying to build a great team. If it's not fun, I'll just turn the game off, right? That's got to be how Chris Ballard thinks too, right?
Everything in the six off seasons or whatever it is that I've covered him now suggests that that's not exactly how that's not how he thinks. It's the opposite of how he thinks. But for those of you who listen to the Colts Cover 2 podcast, there's your off season. We just gave it to you. It's LeJarius Sneed, Brock Bowers, two safeties, and then whatever else, who knows?
Kendall Fuller and Danielle Hunter. There we are.
I feel very.
Oh no, Brian Burns.
Well, you can't do Brian Burns and Brock Bowers. Not even in Madden.
You offer all of next year's draft for Brian Burns. Again, we're not playing into next season. This is just Madden.
So there you have it. That's what the Colts have next year based on this pod. I can almost guarantee that when we do this pod at some point next week, it'll be weird. The day next week is going to be weird because of free agency. That will not be the outcome. I would hope for two of those things. But for the Colts Cover 2 podcast, this has been your free agency preview. Nate is headed to St. Louis to get a break from football and watch some basketball for a little bit. Eat some toasted ravioli. What does St. Louis have?
Yeah, that's their thing, toasted ravs. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's good.
We couldn't end this pod without me taking a shot at some city. But yes, so the Colts Cover 2 podcast, I'm Joel Erickson. This has been Nate Atkins. We'll be back next week after we assume things will happen.